Next on BYUSN, pushback on the playoffs, specifically against the SEC and Big Ten as it pertains to the college football playoff. Is it about time? Plus, nice. If we've seen to this point a bored AJ DiBonsa, what does an exciting AJ look like next year?
We'll tell you who said he was bored last year. Jake Retzloff and Tanner Wall join us in studio to talk about their trip to Jerusalem. Plus, BYU baseball is in action right now in the Big 12 tournament. We've got updates.
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Very happy Wednesday, May 21st. I am Spencer Linton, alongside a man who always makes room for a headband in his wardrobe, Jerem Jordan.
Yes, I do. Yesterday, Dominique Diamande, by the way, was at BYU basketball practice, or I believe it was Monday, actually.
Let's go.
So, some videos, some pictures. Good to see the transfer from Washington, who's from France there, which was cool. And then I noticed in these clips that Richie Saunders is not wearing his iconic headband. What happened? What's it? Was this just one day? Is this the new look going forward? Iconic headband wasn't there, Spence.
Maybe it's
what,
just
is he not
a game
eating
day
tater tots
thing.
Do now?
Maybe
what's going
it's
on?
Just a game day thing, like an actual game thing.
He practices in the headband. This is breaking news. I don't know if I could say anything more important than we don't know what the future looks like with the headband with Richie Saunders right now. But we know he's back, so that's good news.
Go ahead and mark that down in the annals of the important things said on this show.
Man, May 21st was a really important show. They talked about headbands. By the way, BYU baseball has mentioned.
Oh, there's an actual game happening right now.
As we speak, 9 a.m. Central start. So they've been going at it 2 hours now. They're in the top of the seventh. BYU is up 2-0. Here's how the scoring started back in the second inning.
Just one in the zone. This ball hit pretty well into the gap in right center. This is going to get down off of the wall. It's going to drive in a run. Runners in score position. Takes care of it. And the Cougars jump out to a 1-0 lead.
Krim McChesney with
a
double.
Your season's over.
It's 2-0. And frankly, Arizona took BYU to the woodshed in the regular season. But right now, 2-0. It's single elimination. Top of the seventh. Let's go, boys. That's on ESPN Plus, BYU Radio, as we speak.
That is the beauty of
updates
a single
throughout the show.
Elimination bracket. Yep. Just find a way to be better in that unique game.
We owe them one for the regular season game in football.
Absolutely. And for a few other things. Come on, Cougs. Beat the Cactus Utes. On that note, rise and shout. Let's get to what's trending.
What are the goals of BYU football?
I expect BYU to compete for the conference championship game.
I think they're one of the top 14. You gotta believe
in dreams. Play your way in. Don't just guarantee yourself a spot. BYU will be one of my contenders to be my number one team in the conference.
What's trending, presented by Tim Daly Ford, part of the Tim Daly Auto Group, serving Utah since 1968. You just heard the voice of Shahan Jayaraja, college football insider, who said the phrase, play your way in to the playoff. Could not agree more. That said, the college sports landscape continues to change, Jerem. We could have a decision in the House revenue sharing case this week and a discussion around a change in the college football playoff format, although that may have hit a snag. Yahoo
Good.
Sports Ross Dellinger reporting there is pushback against a proposed 16-team format that would award 4 automatic berths to the SEC and Big Ten each, so that's half of the field in 2 conferences, while giving both the ACC and Big 12 2 guaranteed berths. There would be 3 at-larges and 1 group of 5 in that 16-team format. Is the pushback going to be enough, Jerem, to overcome this SEC-Big Ten combo power play?
The hope so is yes. And Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports outlined 3 valuable allies for teams outside the SEC and the Big Ten. One is Notre Dame. That Notre Dame is saying, yeah, no, hold on. Normally Notre Dame is like, yeah, whatever they want for the power players. Number 2 is there's a new college sports commission that's forming. And one of the main people is a Big 12 connected guy. He's the Ryan Smith, the most famous booster, if you will, of Texas Tech. Cody Campbell is his name.
Okay.
Multi-billionaire. He's on this commission. That helps. And then the other is the court of public opinion, that everyone else is going, now, wait a minute. Why do you need four each? What's going on? I love that there's some pushback, which is great. And Ross Dellinger outlined that in his article. I recommend reading it. Good stuff, because guess what? You can't have four for the SEC and Big Ten. I know there are those who have said on this show and when we've been talking, like, hey, two's great, just take it. No, we can do better. I think we can do better. So I like that there's some pushback.
I believe that there is enough pushback to prevent this current format, but it also stops the expansion to 16 teams. So if you don't like more in the college football playoff, then that is the setback, at least for the moment.
It seems that 16 is happening. It's the auto birth discussion.
Is it, though?
Yeah.
Because it's, I think the push...
Ross makes it sound like 16 is happening. It's just how many births.
I hope that 16 does indeed happen. But if the cost is four for the Big Ten and four for the SEC, and that's half your field, I can't get on board with it. Just like like the public consensus, it doesn't feel fair. If the Big Ten and SEC are so powerful and taking nothing away from those conferences because they do have the majority of the blue blood college football programs in them.
They were empowered, by the way, by the by those who vote.
They should be good enough to just handle the four spots.
Good thing.
What I don't want to have happen is where you get to a situation where the fourth best SEC team and the fourth best Big Ten team are floating around 18 to 24.
And what if the third best Big 12 team is
number 15? Yeah. And it's like, really? You're not going to let number 15 in because auto bursts for number 19 and number 23 are in play?
At that point, conference affiliation is meaningless to me.
Exactly.
Like, what? What does that have to do with anything?
We don't want to minimize that.
Relative to the power leagues. Not just anybody. Like, now that we're in a power league, we go, well, you got to be in a power league. Like, that's how we kind of roll now.
Yes.
We didn't a couple years ago.
I am all for an expanded 16-team playoff format. I don't want the situation that we have now with 12 where there is a bye for the top four seeds, and then if you're 5, 6, 7, or 8, you get a home game. Because, weirdly, 5, 6, 7, and 8 had, like, this crazy advantage where they dominated in their home game, and then all of those seeds went and took care of the teams that had a bye and were rusty and sat longer. I don't know. I didn't like the format. Maybe it was just a one-off that way.
Well, and part of it was that you had lower-ranked teams as conference champs that weren't favored in those games anyway.
Ohio State, Oregon's gift for being the top overall seed was the chance to play Ohio State.
Right. So let's talk about this. If you're in charge, what are you doing with the playoff? Because in 25, it's the 12-team format, okay? In 26, potentially, it could be 16. What do you want here? Do you want 16? And what would that look like?
Okay, simply, I just want conference champions to have an automatic berth, like the NCAA men's basketball championship.
That makes sense, yeah.
So you give the four power leagues an auto berth. You give the best group of five team an auto berth to protect that entire entity within college football.
Group of six now. With
yes,
yeah.
Group of six. Then you have 11 at-large spots. And you go just by straight ranking to put those teams in. So
does Notre Dame need to meet a certain criteria? Like, or it just, hey, you have
can
to be one
be
of the next 11.
Can they be a top
11.
16 team? Like, if Notre Dame can't be a top 16 team, they don't deserve to be in.
Well, and it's not straight up top 16.
Top 11,
per
maybe.
Se, right? Because if a team went 0-3 in non-conference and then they went 9-0.
That's the beauty of the bubble, though.
Yeah. And they won the league. That's what I'm saying. Like,
the SEC champ and the Big Ten champ almost assuredly will be in the top 16.
And those teams are typically top 5 teams.
We believe that the ACC and Big 12 champ also will be top 16 teams. So they're not bid stealers.
It's rare that they wouldn't be.
Yeah, they're not bid stealers. So if you're really in the top 14, there might be like a group of five teams that steals a bid and one other.
In football, there's no bid stealers because you don't have a four-game tournament to the championship. So have a nine-game regular season.
Notre Dame is good enough to be in the top 14 and just get in. Like, that's plenty favorable.
You get no sort of number that you cross? Yeah.
No.
Okay.
So that's as simple as it gets. Like, why can every team not just strive to be one of the top 14 or top 16 teams in the country and be like, okay, we're good enough to be in the playoff. Let's go. You win your conference championship. You deserve to be in there. Five protected bids. The other 11 are at large. What would you do differently compared to that?
just want to clarify, no buys. Everyone's playing straight up,
yes.
right?
They're,
you're
yes.
16.
You're just, no buys.
The top two teams that play in the championship game, like the teams that play in the championship game, they play four. Everyone else is playing one, two, or three games, right? What I want out of this is you don't necessarily need the top two teams in your league to play for a conference championship. I love the idea that's been thrown out there of, well, if you have a clear champ, let each power league say declare their champ in the way that they want.
And that's the auto bid.
Yes. And if you want that to be a 1v2 game for the championship, that's great. If you want it to be, hey, we have a certain amount of auto bids, we're going to ensure that we get team one and two in, and we're going to play three and four in a game to get into the playoff in a better spot, great. Whatever a league wants to do with that, I think I'm fine with. Because I think it'd be fun. We've talked about, hey, what if the Big 12, let's say they do have two automatic berths. Now you go 1-4 versus 2-3 for the two bids. To me, that's what you do. And last year would have been fun with that, right? If BYU was one of the top four seeds and they played in a, it's not a semifinal, it's a play-in game to get to the playoff as one of our two auto bids, that'd be amazing, right?
But then you're on the verge of playing 17 or 18 games in a season, right?
Let's freaking go, man. let's they would have to change a rule of like, okay, this isn't the championship game. It's another thing, a play into that. I'm not going to argue against this because what I want is compelling games, and these would be amazing compelling games. I know it's tougher on everybody. They are getting paid now. They can form a union at some point if they want to regulate, hey, we're playing too many games and that kind of thing. But could be interesting to see where this goes. There is a point of diminishing returns, certainly, with how many games you're playing. But right now, the idea of a 16-team playoff sounds awesome. And again, what you mentioned about that, that's not everybody. That's just the teams that make the championship game.
Yes.
They're the one. The teams that make the Final Four, yes, they played two more games than everybody else or whatever.
It feels like there would be way more negative reaction if you allowed the Big Ten and SEC four auto bids, because inevitably there will be years where those fourth place teams are well outside the top 16 and they're just protected into the playoff. Why? Well, because the conference that they play in is a tougher slate. Get out of here. If you're not good enough to be in the top 16.
That's what the committee's for, right?
Exactly.
To sort of sort that in a way that
makes
sense.
That's where the human element and the eye test come into play.
And you can use all the metrics you want to sort of decide that. At the end of the day, you can't appease everybody. If you want to be completely unhappy in your life, try and appease everybody. Good luck with that.
Yeah, not easy.
In this or just
impossible.
Life. Yeah.
Impossible.
Yeah.
But, man, I can just see the writing on the wall. Missouri, number 21, fourth-best SEC team.
They're in over BYU, who is the third-best Big 12 team.
Who's number 12?
At number 17.
14. Yeah, like
14, 17. Like, that would be so annoying. Yes.
That would stink. And yep. It's inevitable, it feels like, if that is the case. Compelling stuff, but 16 teams would be awesome either way.
Sounds like it's going that way.
Our question of the day. What does a fair college football playoff format look like? You've heard our thoughts on the matter.
I want to hear from the people who want an unfair version.
At
who says I want fair?
Matt Hodgman says 8 to 16 teams with no buys. Auto bids only for conference champions. How you determine said conference champion up to the conference, as Jeremy was
four presenting. Four P4 conference champs, one G6. I think it's good.
Seeding based on conference standing and overall rank. If multiple auto bids per conference is unavoidable, then we need to have a framework to regularly reevaluate how many bids each conference gets.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Not going to happen. Big Ten, SEC are too powerful. Hopefully, it ends up being zero auto outside of the champ.
Would you take a compromise? Three for the Big Ten, three for the SEC, two for the Big 12, two for the ACC, and then five at-large and one group of six.
Honestly, probably.
I would do that.
Because
I would compromise to that.
I just don't have I just don't get the sense that, you know, there's a loud voice there for the ACC and Big 12 compared to the ACC Big Ten and SEC. So I'd probably take that. Because then you have two more at-large. Five at-large feels good. That feels good. Like this year, it would have been nice to have BYU in the hunt. Ole Miss, South Carolina, like that whole conversation. Let's go. That'd be great.
Three at-large in a 16-team format feels like way too few.
It's not enough.
Way too few. The compromise, maybe, if there were five.
How about that's just all at-large minus the conference?
Yes, that's
11 at-large.
That's what we feel is fair.
11 at-large would be great.
Weigh in on X, Facebook, and Instagram.
Yesterday on BYU Sports Nation, NBA draft expert Rafael Barlow from Locked On NBA Big Board said the following about A.J. DiMonzo.
I'll be honest here. AJ had a very, very, very good senior year. And I still think we didn't see the best out of him because he was bored. That's just my personal opinion.
Basically citing that he wasn't kind of challenged enough. If what we've seen thus far was quote-unquote bored, end quote, AJ DiBonta, what does that mean for men's hoops this season?
Yeah, I can't wait to see what engaged, excited AJ DiBonta looks like. I don't want to cheapen what he did in high school. I think that he played hard in some of the games that I watched, and he was fantastic. Yeah. I don't think Rafael meant this as a slight in any way.
No,
he's so much better than his competition.
I think he's saying, wait until he gets super challenged to see his best self.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does he respond to that?
Yeah. He'll respond great.
We find out, as far as regular season standings count, on November 3rd against Villanova in Las Vegas, when certainly he will be challenged on another level.
And frankly, I don't necessarily agree. I think it's an interesting conversation. But like, was the competition always super strong and up to his level? No. Is it natural to perhaps be less engaged at times? Sure. But hey, we can't wait to see him challenged.
Hopefully
see his
playing
game go
for,
up.
Yeah.
And he talked about, hey, looking at Darren Peterson at Kansas, like he's going to, hey, I got to prove myself even more. Yeah, AJ is going to be engaged and excited. I have no question about that.
Hopefully playing for Team USA in the under-19 squad.
Hopefully.
Internationally.
Hopefully.
I'm saying hopefully playing in that format will help him experience some better competition.
I should let you finish the sentence.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You should finish the sentence.
What?
I like the idea of him playing some high-level international competition as a ramp-up for what's going to be every team's best. Like, every team knows, BYU has AJ DiBonta, the potential number one overall pick.
Oh, they all know him. Yep.
They're going to send their best, so he's going to get.
Do we know what jersey he's wearing, by the way? He's wearing one in this. He's wearing 23 in practice right now. Do we know what number he's going to wear for BYU?
I believe he's wearing number one.
Oh. Why is he wearing 23 in practice?
Maybe it's, I don't know. He talked about that in his day in the life. Like, they gave me this, or my practice jersey. I didn't get the number that I wanted, but so they gave me number 23. Yeah. So I'll rock MJ today.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was just a random number.
Yeah. But I am interested in those things, though. What is he wearing? What number is he wearing?
Or is he number, I'm trying to recall, is it number one
number
or number three?
Number two or three?
Number three, maybe?
I don't know. I don't know.
That's a question we should
like
ask him next time we talk to him.
I like number one. 23 is good, too. Wear 32 while you can.
Before we get to break, we need to check in again on BYU baseball in round one of the Big 12 single elimination tournament. BYU still up 2-0
in the bottom of the seventh inning. Let's go.
Outstanding. Can they find a way, Jerome? Like, what? So let's say
looking
they
good.
Win. Let's say BYU baseball wins today.
Yes.
Like, is this enough to be like, yeah, they've clearly taken a step forward from last season?
I think making the tournament already was a step forward. Winning a game and a team that swept you and kind of dominated, I think that'd be great. Arizona is sitting there as the 4 seed tomorrow morning as well, by the way. So finish the deal. Not over quite yet. 2-0, bottom of the seventh. Looking good. Just got through the stretch. Let's go.
Take care of those Arizona schools. First, Sun Devils today, and then just get to the next round. Just one game.
Yeah.
I love that. It's just one game.
One game's kind of fun, let's be honest. Join us this Friday for a BYU Sports Nation Deep Blue Special featuring inspiring stories from basketball players like Richie Saunders, with or without the headband, Dawson Baker, Mawet Mag, and more. Friday noon Eastern on BYU TV and BYU Radio.
After the break, longtime gymnastics coach Guard Young is the center of our Deep Blue feature this week. After BYU cut the men's gymnastics program, how did he get back to Provo? This is BYU Sports Nation.
This portion of BYU Sports Nation is presented by the Tim Daly Auto Group, serving Utah since 1968.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. We are live in Studio B with your day-to-day BYU Sports play-by-play. I am Spencer Linton alongside Jerem Jordan. BYU gymnastics has been a part of Coach Guard Young's life from a very young age. He found success in competing at BYU, but also saw the cancellation of men's gymnastics at BYU, which drove him away from Provo. But an opportunity to come back to the place where he saw that program disappear, he came to fruition and helped him reevaluate it to bring things full circle. This is Deep Blue featuring BYU gymnastics coach Guard Young.
Growing up here in Provo, Utah, my dad was the men's gymnastics coach here at BYU.
We would have the opportunity to bring our family into the gym and get them exposed and let them play and have fun. And they were raised in a gymnastics world.
Wayne coached 8 years at BYU. I thought we would be there forever, you know, because Wayne was doing very well and we loved it there. And then all of a sudden he knew he needed to do something different.
My father decided to retire from coaching and go back to become a doctor. When he graduated medical school, he had to pick a location that had a good program for him, but also provided a good opportunity for both boys and girls gymnastics. So there were very few places in the country that would allow that, and Oklahoma just fit the bill perfectly.
You know, my early memories of Guard were a really determined kid that, you know, wanted to follow in the footsteps of his father, who had been an Olympian. But we were recruiting him pretty heavily, and BYU was as well.
Some of the factors that took into play of that decision of to come to BYU was, you know, there was a family legacy. It was also the environment. It was a place where I knew I could thrive, not only athletically, but academically, and most importantly, I think spiritually. After visiting both campuses and talking with my parents, a lot of prayer, decided to leave Oklahoma and leave ultimately Mark to come to BYU to play here.
Guard was not your typical gymnast. He was very dedicated. Dating someone like that was a little hard. He told me that he had priorities in his life. The first priority was his membership in the church. And then the second thing was gymnastics, that he was committed to his sport and to his goals. And he said number three came his social life.
The road to those goals maybe started off pretty rocky. I remember going to my first senior national competition shortly after arriving and found myself back in the late 30 rankings. In fact, the following summer, I wanted to go to the national championships, and my coach at the time told me no. I didn't like that answer very much. I sat down with coach and told him, "Don't tell me no, coach. Tell me what I need to do to be ready to go." I went back to that national competition, and I had jumped, you know, into the top 10. So from 36 to 10 was my jump. That was a pretty big jump for me. And then later on that next summer, ended up making my first senior national team. Entering in my senior year, I had a teammate, Courtney Bramwell, who was a ring national champion. I was the current vault national champion. We felt really good about our chances.
I remember getting the phone call from him one evening, and he just said something terrible has happened. And I just was like, what could this possibly be? And he said, they just announced that they're gonna drop the men's gymnastics team.
So the announcement was made in that room 149 of the Smithfield House, where the athletic director came in, sat us all down, and told us that this would be the final year of men's gymnastics for BYU. And there was no room for questions, there was no room for discussion. That decision had to be made, and that was the decision. And it honestly felt like the world had just fallen out from underneath me.
He was not planning to be done after his NCAA career. He was wanting to continue to train. And he felt like the rug got pulled out from under him and wasn't sure what he was going to do, how he was going to keep working towards his goal of making an Olympic team. And then his former coach, Mark Williams, stepped in and really gave him an opportunity where he thought a door had been shut.
I had a conversation with Guard about whether he wanted to continue after college. He had plan on continuing to just train at BYU, but that wasn't going to be an option. And I gave him an opportunity to come back to Oklahoma and be my second assistant coach and continue to train with us. And he kind of jumped at that, was able to move and finish doing his undergraduate work at BYU while training with my team at Oklahoma and also coaching.
and ended up going and competing well at the national championships in 2001 and making my first world championship team, where we got to go and compete for Team USA and win a silver medal. And ultimately found myself making the 2004 Olympic team.
In 2010, we reached out to Gard in about July for the upcoming Hall of Fame and asked him if he would be willing to be inducted.
I was a little bit surprised, taken back, because, you know, I was on the men's gymnastics team. Why are you calling me? I didn't think BYU cared about gymnasts, men gymnasts at that.
He was a little apprehensive just because of his feelings about the program, but it was pivotal. It changed his whole feelings towards BYU, him coming and us reaching out to him saying, hey, we do value you.
I really maybe gained perspective that my time at BYU, while maybe didn't end the way I wanted it to end, I was taken care of. I had a great education. I met my wife. My testimony of the Church of Jesus Christ was strengthened and supported while I was here. So maybe 10 years, some time, I'd gain some perspective of what BYU was and that maybe it's okay to like BYU again.
I remember the night Gard was sitting on our bed and he said, I need to tell you something. And I could tell it was something big. So I sat down on the bed next to him and he said, BYU called me and said they're looking for a women's gymnastics coach. And he said, I told them I'm interested. It was super exciting for me, number one, that opportunity would come available, and number two, that Gard was ready to go back to BYU.
One thing I hung on my wall was a plaque that I got when I was a senior in college naming my team men's team of the year. And it's interesting that I would hang that on the wall because that was the year they cut my program. It's not a moment of sadness or bitterness. It's more of a reminder to let things go. Maybe the end of my BYU career didn't end the way I was planning it to end, but all said and done, I think looking back, when you hold on to grudges, when you hold on to anger and bitterness, look, it's not affecting BYU. It's not affecting the people you have those feelings towards. Who was it really affecting? And I think it was affecting me. So what I'm learning from this is let things go. Because who is it really affecting? And the more we can do that, I think the better off we'll be.
Wow, how about that perspective?
I did not realize the emotional journey he had to go through to return to be the coach here. Forgiveness of, you cut my program. I kind of didn't like BYU for a while is what he said. And then,
yes,
hey, it's okay. And he's helped this program a ton. And he's an old-timer here in any sport. Like, goes to the Olympics. Medals.
Silver medalist?
He let me wear the silver medal around one day. I just took it to football practice. Micah Simon's like, what's that? I'm like, a silver medal from the Olympics? Like, what? Why do you have it? I don't know. Gard Young gave it to me. Gard's awesome, man. I'm glad he's at BYU. Obviously, that last name means something. We got two now, right, with Kevin and Gard here at Brigham Young. So that's cool, man. I didn't realize that journey for him emotionally.
He's building the program once again. Got BYU to a top 18, top 20 area. Little bit of a drop off, naturally, as it happens in collegiate sports. He's building that program back up again. He's doing an incredible job.
That's great. Great staff, too.
After the break, where BYU football's recruiting class ranks for 2026 right now, and another live update from the Big 12 baseball tournament. The Batcats working to play another day.
Come on, boys.
This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store. Official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Follow BYU Sports Nation on social media, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok.
Welcome back to Studio B. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jerem Jordan. And these are your Wednesday headlines.
BYU football comes in at number 29 in 24/7 sports recruiting rankings for the 2026 class so far, highlighted by a four-star tight end commit, 68th best player in the country, an offensive lineman who's also top 100, among others. Cougars just got commitments from a couple of three-stars last couple of days that have bolstered that ranking into the top 30. That class is looking really, really nice, and they're hoping a particular quarterback joins it here soon as well.
This is new territory for BYU.
Keep pushing the
envelope. Rising up the recruiting ranks.
Love it.
BYU baseball playing Arizona State in the single elimination Big 12 tournament right now in Arlington, Texas. The Batcats leading the Sun Devils 2-0 in the top of the eighth. If they can hold off Arizona State, they get the 4-seed Arizona tomorrow.
More baseball news. First base baseman Cooper Vest, shortstop Ryder Robinson, catcher Parker Goff, all named all Big 12 honorable mention. Goff 16 homers, top five in the Big 12, led the team. Robinson second on the team with 11 dingers. Goff started every game behind the plate for BYU in the regular season.
Budding BYU basketball star A.J. DiBonsa has accepted an invite to participate in Team USA U19's training camp in Colorado Springs, held from June 14th through the 16th. If DiBonsa decides to play, the FIBA U19 World Cup will take place in Switzerland beginning on June 28th.
If he likes the sound of music, I think he should play. Justin Sterner pitched 1 1/3 yesterday for the Athletics in a loss to the Angels. He had a strikeout, gave up no runs in his appearance, which is what he does. 22 of his 23 appearances now, no runs allowed. Four straight games without a run allowed as well. Only five earned runs, all in one inning, in 24 innings pitched. Unbelievable. He's a sub-2 ERA right now.
So 23 scoreless innings, one inning with five runs. That's what you're telling me?
Incredible, right?
Great stuff. He's going to earn himself some big money in the major leagues if he keeps that.
He's going to move out of my neighborhood at this rate.
After the break, Jake Retzlaff, the BYU quarterback, and captain and safety Tanner Wall join the show to discuss their recent trip to Jerusalem, what they learned about themselves and their teammates there. This is BYU Sports Nation. BYU Sports Nation continues live from Studio B. I am Spencer Linton alongside Jerem Jordan. Joining us now in the Cougar Council Room is BYU quarterback Jake Retzlaff and safety and fellow team captain Tanner Wall, who just returned from what I imagine is an unforgettable trip to Jerusalem. So let's just start there. General commentary. How was this unique opportunity? A question for both of you. Jake, we'll begin with you.
Nothing short of a trip of a lifetime. I think that it was an unbelievable opportunity for us to go out there. And it wasn't just Jerusalem. It was, you know, Tel Aviv and being able to go to, like, the Dead Sea and stuff like that. It was just an unbelievable trip. We could go on for hours and hours, I think. Anybody who ever asked me, how was the trip? I'm like, yo, what are you doing for the next 3 hours? I could tell you everything about it. It was unbelievable. It was awesome. There's, you know, pandemonium is the word we described the win at Oklahoma State this year. And that's how I described the trip, too. It was awesome.
Tanner, same question for you.
Yeah, you know, it was amazing, you know, being there, you know, as brothers and being able to experience that all together. Well, I think one of the things that made it most special for a lot of us as well was being there for Jake and seeing how special that was for him, right, making this trip, being able to go and, you know, go to Jerusalem and visit the Western Wall and, like, seeing, you know, the amount of emotion that was tied to that experience for Jake and for us, right? But being able to, you know, be there all together and have the scriptures unfold before your eyes, right? You're sitting at lookouts, looking over the city, being reminded of stories that we've learned our whole life. And it's like, you know, it happened right here. So it was amazing just to kind of put a visual to all these things that we've read and studied throughout our lives.
Danny, we hung out with you quite a bit on the cruise. How'd you get on both these trips? Because that's pretty good, Doc.
I don't know. I think the first one's because my wife's probably the most likable person on the planet. So they were like, yeah, he's her plus one. But for Jerusalem, you know, just grateful to Jake for inviting, you know, some of the fellow captains to come with him on this. But
Jake, as we look at these pictures,
what a photo
in front of the Western Wall. And to put this in context, and I don't want to undersell this, this is the most iconic holy place in the Jewish religion, the Western Wall. So walk us through that moment as you are here. What's going through your mind?
Yeah, I knew it was good, like, leading up to the trip, people asked, what are you looking forward to most? I was like, yeah, Western Wall is going to be an incredible experience, and I'm looking forward to what it's going to be like. Because, like, you hear stories about how when you walk into the kind of the concourse on the feeling of when you walk in there changes. And there's kind of like two different areas. There's one like you could see it and there's viewing and there's a little closer. And it's like once you get a little closer, once you get up to the wall, like these moments, it just made you feel, I don't know, just like a hand on your shoulder, like a little guidance, like a little reassurance for me, honestly. Like it was an unbelievable feeling. There's no way I could put words to describe it. I could just try to help you guys see how it felt for me. It's just the wholefulness, the fulfilling feeling of being there and how, like, you know, I don't know, just a hand on your shoulder, I guess is the best way to put it, where I was just feeling like so full in that moment, and especially in my spirituality. Religion is a fun thing for me to navigate in my life, just throughout my journey and my career. And being at BYU is definitely a big part of that. And so my spirituality, just being in my religiosity, by being there was just so heightened. It made me just, yeah, it's just an incredible feeling, hard to describe. Just every great adjective and every fulfilling part of my body. It just like, it was a warm day there, Tanner can attest, but like I walked away from the wall, like just drenched in sweat. Like it was just like an overwhelming feeling. And I don't know if that had much to do with the weather as how I was feeling in that moment, but it was an awesome experience that is second to none in my lifetime.
That's beautiful. And I love how comfortable you are in your faith here. Because yeah. That's what BYU should be, a place of faith, a place of, hey, I can express that. Walk us through some of the other experiences you guys went through and how your faith grew through that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think another one of the most unique experiences we had out there, we were able to visit the city of David, you know, which is right close to where the Temple Mount is in Jerusalem. And, you know, what a lot of us learned is that the city of David is an active archaeological site. And they estimate that they've only uncovered 5% of the city.
No way.
Yeah.
So we're walking, we have this entire experience, right? We're actually underneath the street and the city.
The neighborhood.
Yeah, walking along this path that, you know, they say was from the pool of Siloam that led up to the temple. And we're like, you know, this is unbelievable to think that, you know, the Israelites, right, they would come here, they would, you know, do their ritual cleansing and bathing in the pool and then walk up to go worship in the temple. And we're standing there and they're, you know, literally excavating more in front of us as we're there. So to think about how much more will be discovered and you know, the amazing things that they'll learn from that, you know. If you go back 5 years from now, there'll be new things to see. You go back 10 years from now, there'll be even newer things to see. So that was really cool. The Dead Sea was an amazing experience as well. You know, Waylon Lapuaho was the first one to get in the water. And so seeing him just floating effortlessly was like, yeah. I guess the rumors are true. You know, you actually do float in this
water. We have a salt lake nearby. You know, we can test it out as well and compare now. You can compare the two, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Talk to us about, like, the mud and that whole thing, because Waylon didn't have any mud on him. So we need an explanation.
What, he's already what's the story?
He had already washed off.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why.
Yeah. So when you go, so first you get the mud. It's a very much like a, I don't know, a cosmetic experience for sure. Like you'll get mud.
Skincare.
Exfoliation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what you see here, Waylon's already gotten out of the water. So like once you get in the water, it kind of just falls off of you. Like
you don't have to scrub.
No,
it just
kind of. There's
comes
like
off.
At the end when we realize like, oh, there's a little here. Then you wipe it off the top of your shoulder or something, because the top of your shoulder doesn't actually get under the water until you like try to push it under the water. It's like, because you're really floating. I mean, there's one point I was like, it's like, Waylon, are you standing on anything? Because, like, if you're straight vertical, like, it's almost down to your, like, nipple line. It's, like, where your whole body's above the water. And it's just trippy to be. We actually went from the Dead Sea to the pool at the hotel nearby. And I about face planted into the water because I just sunk so fast. I was like, this sucks. I like the Dead Sea water more. It's better to float.
BYU quarterback Jake Retzlaff and safety Tanner Wall are with us on BYU Sports Nation, recapping an unforgettable trip to Jerusalem. As far as a bonding experience goes, and while you have different religious backdrops, you've mentioned that this brings you closer together. How did this experience do that for both of you, to help you understand each other better and take your friendship and relationship to another level?
Yeah, I think that just you learn about each other and you learn about the different walks. And it was cool to see some guys, like Waylon, was a little more uncomfortable than the rest of us in that setting. And it's just, but like seeing a guy like Tanner here, like the way he was just, finishing sentences of the scriptures of where we were was so impressive to me. I was like, dang, this guy knows his stuff. You know what I mean? I'm not going to challenge him on anything. But it was just so cool, like, all of it. Just learning, like, all these super deep spiritual thoughts in these cities, in these places that are so holy to me, but to them, to everybody on that trip. It was super cool to just draw that connection together. And being able to draw that connection together in that way just made it so cool to go back to the hotel and talk about it. I think every day we were there, we said, oh, today's actually my favorite day. Like, it was just that kind of trip. And so, yeah, I mean, the connection, the brotherhood is strong. That's a group of six that is going to be together for a long time. It's can't think of a better group to go with. I had the, you know, privilege to be able to choose the captains, you know what I mean? Like, so I didn't choose these guys. These guys earned this right, earned this privilege to go on this trip themselves. They were chosen actually by the team to be in this journey, to be in this role. And so they got to grow into it and then got the privilege to do this. And I'd say for a team bonding experience, it's second to none.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was really special to compare and really find so much common ground amongst our faith, you know, as members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and the Jewish faith. Like, there's so much overlap, so many things that we do that are so similar. And I kind of got hints of that growing up right outside of the Washington, D.C. area. Had a number of Jewish friends, went to tons of bar mitzvahs. And seeing that kind of come full circle and being reminded of, you know, those conversations that I'd had with my friends and, you know, truly remembering how much similarity we have. I think one of the coolest moments we had on the trip, we had a Friday night Shabbat dinner, and it was in a house with people we didn't know at all, and there was a rabbi with us, there were a number of visiting families, we had our whole group, we had three IDF soldiers. Like, this group came together, and what united us all was, like, our faith in God, right? We all have different backgrounds, but, like, seeing the love and connectivity that came from that experience was amazing. So just being able to witness, you know, how our faith and belief in God, you know, it didn't divide us at all on that trip, right? You know, some people I think choose to see differences, but we were very much united throughout that whole experience.
You guys worked with kids and did a camp or two. How was that experience kind of introducing football? And maybe they knew football a little bit. I don't know what the experience was for you guys.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's American Football Israel, AFI. Like, the same AFI for Athletes for Israel. It's kind of funny, but I heard them arguing over who's the OG. So I guess that's a conversation. But no, it's a cool organization. There's actually tackle football leagues in Israel.
Nice.
It's kind of something that's getting started. Robert Kraft is like a big proponent for that. He's big on pushing that forward, and he actually built this facility that we were at. It's super cool, little stadium and stuff. And so a lot of these kids were actually playing. They're on the U-17 flag team there, and they're actually the number one team in Europe.
Yeah.
Interesting. And with flag football in the 2028 Olympics and the NFL approving players playing in it, flag football's never been bigger, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And so it's cool. I think that I forget what they said with the open division, the men's ranking is in Europe, but they're a top team in Europe too. I think they're a top 10 team and the U-17.
So you're saying in LA you may see a couple of your friends there.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Repping.
Yeah, no
they're
doubt.
They're good enough potentially.
They're hopefully they can make the cut, and
that'd be awesome.
No, honestly, what I want to help them make the cut. I want to be on that team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's cool to see that just came out with the NFL talking about letting their players play, and not a lot of coaches are very happy about that, but I think Harbaugh said, I know I got at Baltimore as a quarterback that might be pretty good at flag football. So those coaches aren't exactly ecstatic about it. We'll see how it works out. Obviously, the NHL made it possible for their guys, and they have an agreement going on. So hopefully the NFL can do something. And me being of Jewish descent, like being able to go represent Team Israel would be a dream of
mine. That's a thing you would love.
Oh, yeah. They've reached out already to me about doing it.
And wow.
So, like, this is a thing. They're actually going to be in L.A. for some sort of, like, training camp deal with Team USA. In June. And so I'm like trying to figure out if I could fly back for the weekend and
wow.
see if I could play with the team or something, or just be around the team.
That would be epic.
And be so sick. Yeah.
Oh.
And then also, like, if I could get my brother to join me on the team, that'd be cool to reunite there. But so yeah, that organization's growing. Tackle football's growing. We met Nimrod, who's an excellent man, just a straight character, awesome dude. He's the commissioner of the AFI. Commissioner of the Israeli League. Great dude. And so, yeah, a lot of these kids, it's fun to watch them play. It's fun to watch them sling the ball around. We actually, at the end of the camp, we got to play them. It was
The U-17 team challenged us to a game.
Flag game, and it was a lot of fun. Hopefully some clips come out. Oh, we did win.
The expected outcome happened.
It occurred. Okay.
It was like on the boat when they said the employees want to play the BYU athletes. I was like, we're going to watch a scene here. They're going to take them down hard.
Now, if you had avoided answering who won the question, then that would not be good.
Yeah. So we did.
Well, it wasn't about who won.
There's a couple touchdowns, though. We had a trick play, threw it to Tanner. Tanner threw one to Chase.
Double pass.
Nice.
Waylon did catch two passes.
Waylon had two.
Oh. Let's get a little guard eligible.
Waylon's hilarious. We just put him out wide, ran a hitch, hit him in the chest with it. He goes, he says he ran the first one, and he turned around, and he's like, dude, the ball was on me. I forgot, like, you're an actual like, quarterback. Yeah, Waylon.
I'm a quarterback.
That's what I'm supposed to do. Quarterback. So we just literally ran him a hitch on one side and then flipped the entire play. I ran a hitch on the other side, banned him for two plays. He got like 15 total yards. It's sweet. And then hit Chase over the top, and then hit Tanner over the top on another one. Talon almost sold us. Throw the ball to Talon, hits him, goes through his hands into the other guy, into the defender's hands, and they drop it. Thank you.
Oh.
But that would not I would never live that one down throwing a pick to one of those kids. But the only thing I'm disappointed about is we didn't get Will Farron a catch.
Mm. Will, no catches for big game, Bill?
No, I think we were scoring too fast. Okay. That's really what it was.
No extra points in flag football.
Yeah. You said that can't happen in the actual season. Yeah. a trick play.
He's got, what does he average, 9 yards a carry or something like that?
Yeah. He is exactly right. Top runner on the team.
He was telling me that the other day at workouts. He's like, what do you average?
You're like, sacks are included in mine.
Sorry,
come on.
Will. Sorry, Will. You're that guy. You know, LJ can't even talk to you, bro.
All right, let's finish this up. And you competed or participated in a service project as well. There were so many things happening, but just to kind of summarize, and this is tough because we've got about a minute left, but how would you, a question for both of you to close, Tanner, wrap up or summarize what this experience meant to you?
I have so much gratitude for the Athletes for Israel organization, first of all, for allowing us to have this opportunity. So big shout out to them for giving us this chance. But for me, you know, as Jake kind of already used the words, it was the trip of a lifetime, right? For me, walk where the Savior walked, go into, you know, Gethsemane and pray there and, you know, have a very special moment with my Heavenly Father and just, you know, thank Him for, you know, giving us His Son and for us having, you know, the ability to, you know, change our lives and really, you know, find joy in all that we do. That was really special. And I'm just very impressed with, you know, the members of the Jewish faith and how devoted they are to, you know, their God and the things that they believe. And so just came out feeling more motivated to be even more dedicated and devoted to my faith. And so I'm super grateful for that opportunity.
Jake, what would you add to close out?
Yeah, just like Tanner was saying, I just want to shout out a couple guys like Omer on the trip, who's taking us around, doing a lot of things. Daniel Posner, he's the man behind the curtain. He's the man who sets it all up, showing us all these things. It's so cool. He put this organization together originally for Bruce Pearl and his team at Auburn. He was the first team to go. Obviously, Bruce Pearl being Jewish, being a huge advocate for Israel. It was awesome. We actually got to FaceTime him on the trip and talk to him a little bit and get to know him. And he's just an awesome dude, great advocate for Israel. That's definitely something that I took away stronger than ever. When we're over here in the States, especially, you know, in Utah, doing what we're doing with football, the grind day in and day out, like you just get kind of disconnected from what's going on elsewhere. And it was an amazing trip for that reason. We got to go, you know, onto an IDF base and learn about what they're doing and learn about what's going on there and what they're seeing and ask them questions about, you know, the war. It is a war going on there. And so it was cool to just see that and come away feeling so grateful for the IDF, for Israel being Israel, for, you know, the people fighting. And it's unfortunate things going on like the October 7th attack. We got to go through the whole memorial at the Nova Festival at several kibbutzim, Nachal Oz especially, who was right on the border, who got attacked that horrible day. And then also they attacked bases. And the horrible things that happened that started this whole war is just eye-opening experience, just to be grateful for what we have and what we're doing and to just throw our support for Israel and for the people of Israel. We got to, we honestly, I was grateful. We got to experience a siren where a missile was in the air headed towards our direction. And what they do is I have a voice memo from Omer, who's helping us with everything on the trip. And he said, just get to the shelter. There's a shelter on your floor in the hotel. Wait there 10 minutes, come out, continue life. And it was crazy because I looked down. I heard sirens outside, but we were in the hotel, so we couldn't really hear very well. I looked down, see everybody running inside. And it was a surreal experience, but just like, wow, this is happening. We're going to go to shelter. And, of course, Israel's the Iron Dome. Of course, this is the Iron Dome. And so 99.99% of missiles get shot down, and it did. And we resumed day as it went. But, you know, since then, things have amped up since we were there. We were lucky. Only 1 week, only one alarm is extremely lucky. Wow. It's several a week, and I know that me and Tanner both talked about how our news feeds are different now. We see a lot more of the Israeli news and what's going on, and we were in Ashkelon, which is a little city down south towards Gaza, and Tanner on the way here showed me that there was a siren in Ashkelon. That's where we did our service project, fixed up this apartment complex and helped get rid of a bunch of trash and stuff like that, but it was just an eye-opening experience to be able to be there, to be able to now be more of an advocate than ever for the people of Israel and for the IDF and in a place where the world and like free speech in America gets taken advantage of by several organizations that are preaching the wrong things and are spreading the wrong things and are spreading lies about lots of things. And so for us to be able to go there and to be able to see it and to be able to experience it and to be able to come back and testify of what's going on there was invaluable, I think, for us and especially me. So that experience definitely shaped my life, shaped who I am. In a new way, and I'm grateful for it, like Tanner was saying, and grateful for Athletes for Israel and the whole organization and stuff. And but yeah, this trip definitely meant a lot to me, meant a lot to, I think, the people there. They actually, it was surprising, I think, we talked about, it was surprising how much people thanked us for being there.
They all thanked us.
Everywhere we went, everybody was super nice and like courteous and generous, and were thanking us for being there in Israel. And we're just like, what do you mean? Like, this is a trip for us that we wanted to do, we were excited to do. But they're just happy that we could be there, especially at a time like it is now. And I never felt like we were in harm's way. Definitely in some interesting spots and definitely saw some interesting things, but never felt like we were in harm's way and felt overtly dangerous. But it was a fun trip.
We appreciate you being here as well.
Thanks for being here.
And on that note, we'll wrap up the show. Thanks for being with us on BYU Sports Nation. For Jeremiah Spencer, see you next time.